It's a bright, cold day in February, and the clock strikes 13. The maintenance crews have two problems on their minds. One, the life support systems still aren't right, and two, the old analogue clock above the arrivals desk is on the blink again. It should be showing 20:30. A technician pushes the hand round until the clock shows the right time. Right on cue, a little mechanical man with a hammer comes out of a door on the right-hand side of the clock face and rings a bell. Then, a little mechanical woman comes out of a door to the left-hand side of the clock face, flicks him the V's, and goes back inside again. Right on cue, or thereabouts, a voice says,
"Our mic's alive."
Good evening, good evening, and welcome to the show. They've left me with the keys, as they've had to scarper.
Well, you mean you locked Vantian and Amelia out of the station again, didn't you? Admit
only
it.
Only slightly.
I can see them waving from the other side of the glass. Hello!
Hello!
Okay, so can we have the keys back now? I mean, they're locked out, but that also means that we are locked in.
Yeah, I forgot where I put them.
So, while we wait a locksmith, the rest of us had better get on with the headlines.
Why don't ice monsters eat penguins? It's nothing to do with the rappers.
Pilots Federation issues official statements on doing PP.
Tit for tat spat as Hutton expels suspicious person.
10 good reasons why we can't let you do this, say Pilots Federation.
Keep abreast of the action in Hutton Space with the BGS bit. Here at Hutton, we've received the latest update from Commander Drake Duran of Operation Hot ODF, currently stationed on a redacted ice world in the far reaches of the bubble, performing flight maintenance operations. The entire settlement crew has been sequestered in their quarters, and indeed barricaded behind something heavy due to the discovery by local rampaging ravenous fauna that human beings don't taste like chicken. They're even tastier than that. In an effort to help resolve the situation, Hutton Trucker Commander Drake Duran came up with a cunning plan. The settlement's resident exobiologist, naturalist and, bizarrely given the temperatures, naturist, had noticed that these ice monsters, rather than snacking on the local penguin-like flightless bird population, avoided them like the plague.
"It turns out,"
she said,
"that the penguins are actually carnivorous and hunt these ice monsters in packs, making the most disturbing honking noises."
They've been written up as both eudiptylophobic and sphenescophobic, which means that penguins give them the willies. Drake Duran's cunning plan involved putting on his dinner suit, making a beak out of a discarded toilet roll inner tube, and in true Blue Peter style, even using sticky back plastic of the slightly orange kind, and scooting over the ice on his belly, terrifying the ice monsters into retreating. At a loss for any better ideas, the rest of the settlement's occupants heartily agreed that it was a good plan, especially if it was Commander Drake Duran doing it and they could stay behind the locked door. After dressing him, cracking the door open and shoving him through it onto the ice, a few hours went by. They did see him at one point scooting around on his belly on the ice, which was either a sign it had worked or that the ice monsters were still waiting outside the doors for everyone else to come out and become lunch. An hour again later, the settlement received a call from Dake Duran's radio.
Guys! Guys! Are you there?
He whispered.
It worked! But there's been a bit of a problem. It turns out that my costume was too good. Oh, these penguins are really short-sighted. They've adopted me.
Popping the door open tentatively, the rest of the settlement occupants could see the problem. There was Drake Duran sitting upright in the middle of a huddle of feral carnivorous penguins and not daring to move a muscle.
Can someone work out what these guys are afraid of, please? As I'm getting cramp in one of me flippers standing like this.
The rest of the team are working out a rescue plan. Tune in next week to find out if it worked, or whether Drake Duran had to go full PvP against a horde of angry penguins while dressed like James Bond.
The Pilots Federation has issued an urgent appeal to commanders across the galaxy, requesting that they cease referring to their weekly power play activities as doing PP. While the Pilots Federation acknowledges that maintaining loyalty to one's chosen power requires regular commitment, it wishes to clarify that doing this week's PP is not, as some assumed, a symptom of deep space dehydration, nor an indication that a pilot has been neglecting their fluid intake. It is, in fact, the routine process of grinding merits, a task which, though sometimes tedious, does not require electrolyte supplements, a doctor's note, or a mop. Further complicating the issue, some commanders, perhaps seeking an air of maturity, have attempted to rename the weekly effort of doing my number twos to mean power play two. The Pilots Federation would like to stress that the sense of duty is commendable. This particular phrasing is misleading and suggests a level of backlog more commonly associated with malfunctioning atmospheric processes, not political allegiance. Additionally, the Pilots Federation strongly advises against leaving PP until the last minute. Waiting until the weekly deadline can result in sudden, frantic rush, often leading to misjudged timings, unnecessary mess, and in extreme cases, wet shoes. Similarly, commanders referring to their efforts as dropping off a load for Grom or pushing one out of Aisling are reminded that while this terminology may feel accurate, it does a little to uphold the dignity of interstellar politics. As always, the Pilots Federation urges all commanders to approach these matters with care and regularity. Failing to do your number twos on the schedule can lead to painful blockages, unpleasant delays, and uncomfortably large mess to clean up later. Remember, if you've got to be aligned with a power, stay on top of it, keep things flowing, and do your duty.
Hutton Orbital has taken decisive action this week by expelling a Federation diplomat over alleged espionage activities, marking the latest escalation in a growing diplomatic spat. The individual in question, a mid-level Federation attaché, was reportedly observed on multiple occasions peering through what officials describe as unreasonably large binoculars towards key operational areas of Hutton Orbital. While official sources have not confirmed precisely what the diplomat was attempting to observe, speculation suggests that they were engaged in high-level surveillance of station operations, faction logistics, and, most alarmingly, Alvin himself.
Our leader's movements are, of course, a matter of utmost strategic importance,
commented an official spokesperson.
Whether he is inspecting station defences, approving major logistical operations, or just napping under his desk, this kind of scrutiny is wholly inappropriate.
In a swift and predictable retaliation, the Federation has responded by expelling friend Federico's second cousin, Amigo Angelica, from their diplomatic post. The stated reason? A failure to declare prior participation in the hit and run. Federation officials insist that all diplomatic personnel must be transparent about any past affiliations that could indicate an unseemly level of independence, endurance, or indeed a tolerance for excessive supercruise travel. Hutton representatives have condemned the move, describing it as petty and pointing out that Angelica's involvement in the Hutton run was purely recreational and entirely unrelated to matters of state. The diplomatic tit-for-tat has raised concerns that further measures may follow. Sources suggest Hutton is now reviewing the status of Federation vending machines within the station, citing potential security risks, while Federation outposts have reportedly launched an internal audit of any mugs found in official buildings. When asked if Hutton had any plans to retaliate further, officials merely stated that Alvin is watching.
In response to increasing demands for expanded planetary access, the Pilots Federation has issued a formal statement outlining exactly why commanders should curb their enthusiasm. A panel of leading experts, including ship manufacturers, planetary scientists, and the designers of the Remlock survival mask, have weighed in on the matter, presenting 10 solid, if occasionally squishy, reasons why landing on certain worlds remains firmly off the table. Items 1 through 4. You've already got more planets than you can plough into. Commanders can already land on icy planets, rocky planets, high metal worlds, and metal-rich worlds. That's a lot of planets. A vast, endless selection of cold, lifeless lumps. All slightly different shades of beige, grey, and mildly interesting mango. If that's not enough for you, Vista Genomics recommends that you take up geology, or at least pretend to be impressed by the terrain you've already been given.
We ran a survey,
said one exasperated geologist.
And over 90% of pilots have yet to fully explore a single planet they can land on. But sure, let's give them more places to park.
Number 5. Your hull will have holes. Ammonia worlds, beloved by Thargoids and no one else, present a unique challenge. The ship manufacturer's trade body has made it clear. Ammonia-rich atmospheres will dissolve hull plating faster than a credit balance in a cutthroat commodities market. Remlock Systems has also confirmed that while their masks can keep a pilot alive in the vacuum of space, they cannot prevent the horrifying personal consequences of ammonia exposure, which were described in the report as
not so much a rapid decompression as an unsolicited skin shearing.
This assessment was later amended to
imagine your suit melting, your ship dissolving, and your dignity disintegrating in record time.
Plus Thargoids. Don't forget the Thargoids. VI. You can't rely on rusty relics. While commanders continue to petition for access to water worlds, a coalition of shipbuilders has pointed out that starships don't float. They sink. Speedily, silently, straight to the seafloor. And before anyone suggests an alternative, allow us to remind you that Moray starboats haven't been in production for centuries.
If you can even find one.
Noted them. A representative from Scrap It and Flog It, the galaxy's foremost reclamation agent.
It'll be held together with a wishful thinking, rust, gaffer tape, which is why they're selling them for zillion credits on Galbay as nearly new.
Lacon has similarly ruled out any involvement.
We build rugged ships,
a spokesperson confirmed.
But not ones that double as submarines. You want an adventure? Try opening your cargo hatch in supercruise. Same effect, much faster.
Meanwhile, Unverified reports from deep space explorers suggest that some water worlds contain creatures large enough to view an approaching Sidewinder as a snack-sized starship.
We're not saying there are monstrous, murderous, megafaunal menaces lurking beneath the waves.
Said a spokesperson for Saud Kruger.
But we're also not saying there aren't. We lost a prototype porpoise once. It just vanished. Still sends out distress signals from inside something. Just because we name them after aquatic creatures doesn't mean we want you becoming the ornament in some Kraken's back garden. Actually, Kraken's a cracking name for a ship. Copyright us. Or is that US?
Us. Okay. If you're determined to be devoured, ship manufacturers suggest parking next to a capital-class ship's intake vents instead. It'll be quicker, quieter, and considerably cheaper. Gee, look out for that tree, that tundra, that towering cliff. The appeal of landing on lush, Earth-like planets is undeniable. However, environmental concerns have been raised regarding the impact of high-speed orbital descent on fragile flora, frightened fauna, and frequently flammable forests. I'm going to kill Dave for that.
Oh,
line.
Yeah, we've seen how you fly,
remarked a local city councillor.
We can barely rely on that. I'll try again. We can barely trust you with a toaster-sized SRV, let alone a high-speed orbital entry near a biosphere.
Insurance firms remain reluctant to cover pilots for collisions with trees, tundra, topsoil, or, most embarrassingly, their own shadow. Meanwhile, planetary conservationists are particularly concerned about the introduction of foreign contaminants.
The last thing we need,
one ecologist stated,
is some pilot stepping out, dragging in dust from a system 500 light years away, and accidentally annihilating an entire ecosystem of bioluminescent blobs. Bastard.
Eight. Gas giants give you gravity-induced grief. Gas giants remain firmly off limits. For one simple reason. Physics.
Yeah, we run the numbers,
commented a leading exasperated astrophysicist.
If you're planning to enter a gas giant's atmosphere, your ship will crumple like a crap in a cargo hold.
Pilots are therefore strongly discouraged from testing this. Though ship manufacturers have generously offered to sell replacement hulls to anyone who insists on trying.
It's not a question of if you'll be compressed,
added a Falcon de Lacy engineer.
It's how fast, how hard, and how humiliatingly small you'll be at the end of it.
9. You're a catastrophic, crash-prone, civilization-threatening menace. After reviewing countless docking station logs, major planetary authorities have unanimously rejected requests for populated planet parking.
We've seen how you lot try to land,
said another city planner.
There is no way that we're letting you land anywhere near one of our spaceports with your civilian traffic.
And concerns include, but are not limited to, perilous parking, reckless re-entry, unauthorised urban flybys, catastrophic city centre collapses via Type 9 impact, and the general inability to distinguish between braking and begging for forgiveness.
It's bad enough we got pilots turning landing pads into personal demolition sites,
muttered an air traffic controller.
Letting them loose in a metropolis? We might as well just hand them the keys to a nuclear reactor and hope for the best.
And X, because bureaucracy is best. In closing, the Pilots Federation would like to remind all commanders that while their requests have been recorded, reviewed, and roundly ridiculed, the final decision remains unchanged. Taking into consideration the opinions of
One exasperated geologist.
One spokesperson for Remlock Industries.
A representative from Scarpit and Flogget, the galaxy's foremost reclamation agent.
One non-Texan Lakon spokesperson.
A Sold Kruger representative.
A duly elected local city councillor.
An ecologist.
A leading exasperated astrophysicist. Hang on, that was the wrong voice.
Close enough.
An engineer for Falcon de Lacy.
A city planner.
And
an air traffic controller.
There's only one spokesperson, representative or authority on matters left to ask. The Pilots Federation themselves. If you want the thrill of new planetary experiences, they concluded, we suggest you take a walk outside the station for once, or, failing that, open a window and stick your head out.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we sell well-known landmarks to the BGS people and then spend the money in sweeties before they can catch us. You get billions of Smarties for 5 billion credits. Anyway, there are 18 systems with high influence this week, so if it's a Hutton system above 60% influence, then leave it alone. The Civil Liberty in Wolf 359 and Wolf 1481, so keep your hand in your halfpenny if you go there. Barnard Star has Continuing Investment, Civil Liberty, and Expansion, so it looks like the Ransomers has opened a new branch. Booms are in Kokari, 36 Ophiuchi, and Narensis. There is an outbreak in LP 525-39. And we are at war with Jet Power Solutions in LFT 142. No, I've never heard of it either. This is a chance for us to get a first facility there. We also have a big election in the with the Soul Workers Party and Wolf 629, which gives us the opportunity to pick up our first facility in that system. Well, it's all going on in Hutton space, but what does it all mean? Oh, somebody's typing. Who's typing?
I am.
Stop it! Stop it now!
Just
well, if you want to truck it, then truck medical supplies.
Type faster.
525-39 to help with the outbreak, or truck into Barnard Star for big profits. News just in: outbreak is finished. Okay. if you want to run missions, then run them from Hutton and Wolf 69 to help out with that election. And if you want to shoot it, then get yourself over to LFT 142. And give Jet Power Solutions a multi-cannon enema. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit. And breathe. Yeah, well, it's wow. Well seen he wasn't here tonight when he wrote all that. He didn't dare show his face.
There were one or two little fun ones in that last story, weren't there?
Oh, yeah. I think we coped admirably, though.
I think we got through it. I didn't see any scenes.
I enjoyed that. That was great fun. I need to make a better note of what my voices are, though, clearly.
I mean, okay, I had my eyes closed, but I didn't see any seams, so I'm sure we got
away
with it.
No, I didn't know it's a single thing at all.
Hang on, I can do buttons. I've got a button for that.
Seamless.
Oh!
Off the buttons, you.
Yeah, get off the buttons.
Yeah, I'm not driving, am I?
You've already locked us in the station, so we're stuck here until we can get that locksmith over.
Well, you did post me the keys. that was foolish. No, genuinely, though, I put it to Vitals this evening, and they've gone and scouted it out, and they told me that actually, no, the outbreak has finished, and it was likely not updated properly within the system or something. So it may have been present when the tick happened. The outbreak was broken. That is the exact statement.
I never claim to be accurate. I just claim to say things. I don't claim that they're right.
Yeah.
Are you stealing the... Yeah.
Yeah, but never on purpose.
Yeah, but we can't be wrong all the time. We tried, but it just doesn't work.
No.
I've just seen the word of the week. Oh, good grief. Moving back.
Yes.
Speaking of words of the week, there was a kind of unofficial one in one of those stories. Yes. What was the definition of was it svenskophobic?
Oh yeah, there was svenskophobic. There was one is a fear of penguins looking at you, and one is just a general fear of penguins. Jim knew this earlier.
If I was to take just an arbitrary guess, I would have guessed that svenskophobic meant fear of Swedish.
No.
S-P-H-E-N.
Eudactylophobic is an extremely rare phobia of being watched by penguins. That's the eudactylophobia. The other one.
How do you figure out you suffer from that? Come on.
Eudactylophobia.
You go to the zoo and it's a disaster.
You can't go to Birdland, clearly.
No.
Sphenischophobic is the fear of penguins and of things that look like penguins.
Especially Swedish penguins.
It does sound like Svensk.
It does,
Svenska.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to skeniskophobia, which is apparently the fear of nuns.
Yeah.
Things that look like penguins.
If you go to the zoo and you see the penguins and it's not feeding time when they get those buckets of fish out, then they'll probably just stand there just watching everyone who goes past.
Yeah. Imagine them trying to watch Wallace and Gromit.
Got fish.
Yeah, and was it anatodeophobia, which is the fear of being watched by ducks?
Quack.
Quack.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there's phobias for everything.
No Why isn't what there a button for that?
What, for quack?
Quack.
Find this one.
Ducks, yeah.
I think the penguin one's going to be easier to cope with than the duck one here.
Yeah, but what noise does a penguin make? Is this what we need to put to our man on the ground?
Penguins make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
It's kind of honking. I mean, they're honking anyway. But
not a million miles dissimilar from gannets.
Seabirds. Yeah, it's kind of honking, squawky, seabirdy stuff. Yeah. But they're talking of pee-pee and poo-poo.
Was there a live stream this week?
Yeah, no.
I'm not finished talking about poo. No, there wasn't. There isn't one until... it's February. Well, there won't be one at the end of this month. It's the last Wednesday of every month.
Yeah, but it's January, a short month, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so there we go. Space news?
I guess so. Did anything happen in space this week? Let's find out. So, articles are first.
I was still expecting to rock out and cut it short.
Article number one.
Cornwall.
We are going deep in Cornwall, is what's happening.
Oh,
wow. Who are indeed? They are building the deepest swimming pool for NASA in Cornwall. They are planning to build a 50 meter deep pool, and I can only assume they're looking to use it to train people about how to do OVA walks and stuff like that. But what I did notice in actually reading this story for once, if you scroll down to more on this story is almost a duplicate of the plans to build the world's deepest pool from 2021.
Well,
they just reposted it by accident.
I guess they needed deep planning permission.
Just as an engineering task.
Like, I'm just watching it. It looks like it's about 6 inches deep till you get to that lip.
It's got the kiddie pool and the oops pool.
Yeah. You think they put a wee fence on it or something? But,
you've got an astronaut on a crane over there.
Oh, so they have, yeah. Yeah, but there's one waddling into the water. Look, he's got a wee ramp to go into the water on.
So he has.
I feel I should point out this is a computer render.
Yeah, there's somebody coming up the ladder.
Artist's impression.
In the right-hand side.
It's the shop where you can watch the astronauts and buy NASA t-shirts at the same time on the right-hand side. That also made me chuckle.
Yeah.
Looks like it's a cafe upstairs, isn't it?
Yeah, there should always be. There should be a cafe upstairs at every pool.
So you can get a nice cup of tea and a scone with jam and cream, order as which not specified.
There's a man in a grey t-shirt, looks like he's got a coffee, and he's looking at the window going, there's an astronaut going in the water. Oh, he's gone.
To be honest, the way that guy's standing, it looks more like he's got a little checklist in his pocket, and he's going, yep, that was a 537B.
But the last part on it was quite interesting. We'd like to extend our huge congratulations to everyone at Blue Abyss on their new partnership with NASA Glenn Research Center. So it is basically going to be going ahead, as far as I can tell, because they've now partnered with NASA. They've got that bit more energy behind it, I suppose, if you want to think of it like that.
So when they were trying to get astronauts, but not including NASA, they had struggled with the financing, did they?
So I guess it's really not sure. But you can also, if you feel the need to dive to 50 meters, they will also do subsea training for you. So you can go there instead. So you can go scuba diving in a warm pool.
Nice.
That's not going to prepare you for the oil rigs, is it?
No.
No. I think they wear kind of heated dry suits anyway, don't they?
They do, yeah. Next. Yeah.
Next.
And we're hitting the kiddie news this time. This is from the children's BBC website.
We are hitting the kiddie news because I could not find this anywhere else, which was really odd. But yes, when I first read it, I thought they were suggesting there was a super volcano on Jupiter. And I thought, how does that work on a gas giant? And then I actually read the thing and it said
Smoon.
It was on a moon. Smoon.
Jupiter Smoon.
On a smoon of Jupiter. But yes, this is from the space probe Juno, and it was sent out to examine Jupiter. And it's spent about 5 years traveling through space. And in the end of December, it's traveled 46,000 miles or 74,400 kilometers, which is no small feat in its own right. But then they pointed it at this at one of the moons, and they discovered it has got an enormous supervolcano on it, sort of up towards the north pole of. What is it? The north of the? It doesn't actually say.
Is it that kind of yellowy arc thing?
South pole, is where they found it.
No, then.
And it's on. It might be upside
it's
down.
It's on low, which seemingly is much closer.
Io,
sorry.
That's not an L, it's an I.
English letters suck.
it's a bad font, too.
I do wonder, though, whether my geology aspect kicking in, whether it is something to do with the fact that it's so close to Jupiter and the gravity input
Jupiter onto Io. To quote the article, and this is what tells you it definitely is from a kiddie's website, it keeps getting squished and squashed.
I thought that was direct. That's a direct quote from the NASA website.
Wouldn't surprise.
Yes, it's tidal compression is causing constant messing with its interior. Gets squished and squashed all the time. So.
And heated up.
Mm-hmm. Which would only be true, I guess, would it be true more so if it's metal-based, or does it not?
Doesn't really matter what it is. If you squish and squash anything, it gets hot.
Yeah. Noted.
it's gravity. I think Jupiter does have quite an extreme magnetosphere as well, doesn't it?
Yep.
But that's
second only to the sun in the solar system.
Yeah.
But then again, most things about Jupiter are second only to the sun.
Yeah, Jupiter's second to look the sun to a lot of things. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I hope to. The comments weren't very interesting. The comment on this, which I can only assume is posted by a youngling, is "This is cool." Hashtag Ladybird.
That was me.
Okay.
Talking about
chocolate Ladybird 123 is Mia Harkness.
Fine.
But we may find out.
There's a lot of moons like that that get pulled and stretched and things, and they should have gone cold a long, long time ago, but they don't because of what they're next to.
But the last bit, in the very, very last bit, another flyby of Juno is scheduled for the 3rd of March 2025. So we'll hopefully get a bit more of a look at this in the future. So
in about a month.
Hold on to your hats. More space news incoming.
Space news.
Space news. I'm excited by that one. I like Washimans.
And speaking of more space news.
Yes, what we're looking at now.
Space news.
That was Juno crashing into Jupiter.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Reuters does funny things with the background on this website, I remember. Yeah, SpaceX is to return the astronauts after Trump's demands, according to NASA. I'm now kind of pondering to myself, well, what do you reckon? Do you reckon SpaceX would just take over NASA, buy it out, or possibly SpaceX becomes public? Which way round do you think it would be?
None of the above. A new NASA director has already been nominated. He hasn't yet been approved by Congress, but he probably will. You know,
I nearly put that new story in, but I thought it was a bit boring.
You know, the billionaire that did the Polaris Dawn flights and the first private spacewalk and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Him.
Ah.
Right.
That well-known, not a politician, another billionaire. But yeah, so this is the story then that the return craft for these two, which is already up there and has been for months and is indeed a SpaceX craft, will indeed be the craft that brings them home. The one that took up their custom fitted for them flight suits designed for a SpaceX capsule instead of the Orion one that they went up in, that'll be the one that brings them back. Sorry, the Boeing one they went up in. Yeah. Okay, so big news. Major change of plan.
As in, they're coming back when they were originally coming back.
Yep,
that's long gone, isn't
it? And the ship they were originally coming back in.
Well, not originally, but the second plan. The plan that's been in place since July last year, August last year.
Back in the last one, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like you say, big update, nothing changes.
So on Tuesday night, Trump said he had asked Elon Musk's SpaceX to return two NASA astronauts from the International Space Station who were already scheduled to fly back on a SpaceX capsule in March. So even the Reuters guys are seeing a bit of a hole in the logic of this.
Yeah, so they're instead of coming back in a SpaceX capsule in March, they're now coming back in a SpaceX capsule, but in March.
As soon as is practical.
That'll be March then.
Probably.
Much further into the article, it says it's been unclear whether Trump's demand would mean NASA's bringing back Crew 9 back to Earth before the Crew 10 capsule arrives.
Yeah. That's the only way they can get them back faster.
Crew 10 earlier than planned, while NASA appears to affirm the astronauts' return plans remains unchanged, it did not answer the question whether the Crew 10 launch date would be sooner. So basically, yeah, it just feels like it's...
Crew 10's launch date has already been pushed back several weeks because their capsule, a SpaceX one, isn't ready.
Yeah. And I don't think you can really leave the International Space Station empty, can you? The stuff that has to be done.
It wouldn't be empty. There's Russian crew up there as well.
Oh, no. You're not going to leave the Russians in charge.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting. Mm-hmm. They're going to end up with only one American aboard when they do this.
Yeah,
if I've read that right.
They'll just annex it, mind you. That's American foreign policy as well these days. But you know, it's fine, isn't it? So they're coming back when they were meant to come back, is what we're saying.
Currently, there's been no change in the date or the return craft or any of the other details, apart from the fact that it's now Trump's idea and he's getting them back early.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that's all you need to know.
Yes.
It is a glorious idea from an Oompa Loompa. I mean, sorry, from President Trump.
Yeah. Don't call him an Oompa Loompa. He's a very intelligent man.
I look forward to all of the hate mail from that now.
I never check the mailbox. It's fine.
Do please, if you have any problems, send your complaint to complaints@huttonorbital.com.
We have that website.
It's connected to an automatic printer. It feeds straight into the shredder. It makes the it makes the bedding for the hamsters in Atarius Fusion's hamster wheel to keep the servers running, so it keeps them happy.
I think all it does is send you a rude message by reply.
I kind of want to go and see if this works.
I want to go and see it as well. Send that a message.
It's not a rude one. You might get banned.
Oh, yeah. I'd certainly ban you for that. Right, last one.
Yeah, there you go. The astronaut's original February departure date was delayed to late March because SpaceX needed more time to complete processing of the Crew Dragon capsule. So they haven't got a craft to get them home earlier in, or a craft to get Crew 10 up there earlier. So, yeah, it is what it is. We shall see.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. As long as everybody's clear. Right.
Clear as mud or something.
Asteroid impact on the moon blasted two Grand Canyons in 10 minutes. That's just extravagance, that is.
Talk about showing off. That, if you flick that, through...
That picture looks like the Proteus wave.
Yeah, it does look like the Proteus wave. Maybe it was a Proteus wave.
Either that or a pimple popping site.
That's very niche. If you scroll across two of the photographs, there's a little arrow under the image that will be really hard to see on that. It shows you sort of what the canyons look like. The next one is much clearer.
I can see them. Look at them.
It's quite pronounced, isn't it? It's more pronounced than I thought.
There's one at 11 o'clock and one at 12 o'clock. Is that right?
Something like. I've understood.
I would have said they were about 10 past 10 and 5 to 12.
The energy to create this impact was 130 times the energy of the entire world's nuclear weapons array. So that's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah.
That's a big old bit of rock hitting another big old bit of rock.
And all that left are two skinny little stripes.
Well, you can see the crater.
Oh, that's a massive. It's a big. It looks quite two flat, little stripes and a flat patch. The angle, I think. Yeah.
So I can only assume that in that impact, it's thrown something else along. And the reason it's taken 10 minutes is it's as that debris has skittered its way across, making our canyons. But it's the scale of the thing that just boggles the mind.
I wonder if it's that or if it's actually cracked it. Cracked the moon.
The object that struck the moon is estimated to have been 15 miles, 25 kilometres in diameter.
Wow.
It's larger than the asteroid that struck the Earth. Sorry,
hang on. This is Hutton. You can't give the size of an asteroid in miles and or kilometres.
Oh,
we need it in bananas or
giraffes
if you must. Or if you want to go for the US Geological Survey method, you could do it in large boulders.
Yeah, I prefer the capybara measurement myself.
They were famous for saying that there was a small boulder the size of a large boulder blocking a road, so large boulders are also acceptable. But...
A small boulder the size of a large boulder.
I've lost that figure now. I literally read it out and then forgot about it. 15 kilometres.
I think they've cracked the surface and it's just going to be like clangers climbing out of that thing now from below the surface of the moon. Yeah. All led by the Major, who's very angry.
Friendly reminder for all of our Hutneyers, there is a website called bananasforscale.info. And you can put your value in, and whilst the bananas float around behind you, you can use this website. It's ridiculous.
It tells you how many bananas are in whatever thing you want to measure.
So the two canyons are Vallis Planck and Vallis Schrödinger.
Two physicists' names as well.
So one of them is the smallest possible valley and the other one is there and isn't there at the same time, depending on where you look at it.
It's a bit like our Google Drive, isn't it? The 25, I got it wrong. I typed the wrong number in. 25 kilometres in diameter would have been 140,449.438 bananas.
How many?
I think you may have a little bit too much precision for your accuracy there.
Yes. I like that it's done it in two decimal places and the percentage. That's awesome.
I will post that.
Yeah, please, because I think what I've taken away from tonight's space news is, all this interesting stuff, but also there's a site where I can measure things in bananas.
It's bananaforscale.info. Info. And I won't post that in the chat because I'm not allowed to.
Well, that's just rude. Right. Oh, was that the end of news?
I think it might be. And nobody reported on the 1% asteroid chance of hitting the Earth. We're slipping. Actually, this one caused quite a scare very quickly. I think it was Boxing Day it was spotted. And they spotted a very large asteroid, ridiculously close to Earth. And over the next half hour, they realised it was getting further away. And it had already just missed us. It's back in 2032. And its orbital path at that point puts it somewhere between, I think it's a couple of million miles away and hitting us. Bit of a margin of error.
Yeah.
So they're watching it carefully and they will have a more accurate orbit soon-ish.
How big is it?
Quite.
Oh, okay.
Tunguska scale.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
Bad news for whatever city it hits, but not bad news for the planet.
Yeah, okay. But still pretty bad. You'll probably hear it if it does hit.
Yeah, you're looking
unless you're in the city it hits.
You're looking at 100-mile-wide devastation, not continent-wide devastation. So not too big.
Yeah, okay.
150 metre or something rings a bell, but it's a week or more since I saw the article. So yeah, I think that's it for space news.
Although, if that was catastrophic, what would one do? Is there like a way of space nuking it so that it cracks up into smaller asteroids?
Yeah,
That doesn't help, because then you just get hit by lots of small asteroids. That's like being shot at point-blank range by a shotgun instead of a rifle.
Yeah, well, you split it in half, don't you? You send up some oil rig workers.
Yeah, in a recycled space shuttle with Bruce Willis in the lead.
With Bruce Willis in the lead, yeah. And what you do is you get them to drill a hole and then put the nuclear bomb down. So it's near the middle. It's certainly inside it, and then you can blow it into two pieces and it'll be fine.
On a more serious
note. Documentary.
On a more serious note, what they actually do is a very, very small change to the orbit of the asteroid when it's a long way from Earth, which means it misses by a very, very large amount when it gets here, because that's how orbits work.
Yep. They put something on it and either push it or they heat it up on one side and make it move that way.
They recently did DART, the dual asteroid redirection test. And they basically fired a lump of metal into one, which was a very small space probe, fired off a larger space probe, and it changed its orbit. So they know it works.
Yeah. Feeling that, they can get Eddie Hall to go up and give it a shove.
Or like Gray said, if you paint one side black and one side white, it actually changes its orbit. The uneven heating causes off-gassing.
I have a thing in my house called a solar radiometer that works on that very same principle. And it's a spinny thing.
I've got a special cover for my solar radiometers. They're called curtains. When you open them, the solar radiation shines in, and when you close them, it stops. It's magic.
Yeah, they're brilliant things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, odds are highly against it hitting us, but they're keeping watch, and we've got a decade, best part of, so...
Well, yeah, also they kept watch and went, oh, there's a new one. Oh, don't worry, it's a car.
as the wind whished past their ears, they went, what the fuck was that?
So
we never saw that.
Checking out of space news?
I think so. Space news. I've just been presented with a cookie. It's still warm from the oven.
In that case, I'm going to present everybody with the video that accompanied News Article 1 about the penguin.
Yeah, the penguins.
Right, you are.
So I shall stuff my face. Do that.
Does this now have to be commentated by Valkyrius? Because this is officially Valkyrius's bit.
Not yet. This is pre-space news. We just did it in the wrong order. So if I turn that on... And then I go to there and turn that bit of
that. I don't know. I reckon Valkyries are great. Okay.
I see them. There he is. And he's done a suit.
Yeah. That's him in his suit, skidding around on the ice on his belly.
Big Durant looking for. Yeah. He's looking for carnivorous penguins.
Looking for space walruses.
And oh, that's awesome.
Do you think he came to make friends with the aeroplanes or something? What is he there on his own?
Or the snowman.
Lonely penguin.
Let's have him again.
They probably thought, you know, there's things there, they make fish.
Yeah, they might feed fish.
I suppose it is a little bit like a Thargoid interceptor in the distance when it doesn't have any targets. It just kind of, that's what they do. They just kind of roam around and then leave their trails everywhere.
Yeah. Scudding around.
A lovely blue sky, though. Look at that. I mean, above the clouds, obviously, but that's nice.
Yeah.
Looks like a lovely day to be skating about the ice on your belly.
Mm. I think I'll pass, thanks.
I've not had this worry. I feel cold thinking about it.
So, Vulcarius's bit. Have you got a bit for us?
Have you got a bit?
No, I don't. I told you.
Nothing's happening.
unless you want me to talk about, well...
We'll need to.
Although, well...
hear something.
Wait, did you... Was the thing from the Pilots Federation on your run sheet for today? I can't remember.
The thing from the Pilots Federation? Which thing?
Yeah, the thing that is going to be appearing later this month.
Oh, you mean the live stream?
I meant the update.
Oh, the update? Updates. No.
No, that hasn't happened yet, so we haven't touched it.
No.
We don't believe in updates until they arrive, apart from the ones that we do. Then we do.
But we still tell people about keybinds all the time.
Yeah.
Back up your keybinds, everybody.
Only because you need to back them up.
I don't know. What do you want to tell us about the update?
Well, it's coming this month, apparently.
Yeah. 19th, 20-something? Couple of weeks, anyway.
Ooh, that'd be exciting. So is this the update that includes colonies?
Yes, it should be. They're calling it Trailblazer. Which is as a few people pointed out, it's a bit of an odd name given that we're only actually sending colony ships a few light years away from anywhere somewhere in the bubble.
Yes, but people will be blazing their own trail.
We have been blazing our own trails for years now.
They'll be blazing their own infill of the cavitaceous nature of the bubble, but.
Well, you start at the edge and work your way out, don't you?
I imagine there'll be a bit of both. So some commanders will be, the first thing they're going to want to do is move in some direction outwards. They're going to be looking for the farthest system from Sol that's technically in the bubble. Others are going to be doing infill, though, because there's obviously a lot of empty systems all throughout the bubble. So there'll be loads of space to fiddle around with colony ships. And apparently they're not actually going to cost... there'll be some cost associated, but not fleet carrier cost, is what Arthur and Zach said last month. December.
December. Yeah. Yeah, because I think it's something along the lines of, I don't think you get the colony building ship. I think you hire it to come in. You know, you sort of pay them to come in.
You buy a beacon, and they come and land at the beacon.
Yeah.
Approximately.
And then you bring them the materials to build your colony.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder whether you could... I mean, how much stuff are they going to need?
That's the worry.
That's the worry for us, because nobody here wants to haul cargo.
No.
Everybody here wants to haul cargo.
No, I mean, nobody in the Imperial Navy's mathematics...
Oh, God, no.
...wants to haul cargo. Hutton Orbital hauls cargo all day.
I was going to say, that's what poor people are for.
If only you had some friends who were truckers.
Yeah, imagine. I think that's the thing, is you can get together with friends and everybody can contribute to the colony being built, you know, but I don't know whether it would be in the scope of one person doing it or if you're going to need a fleet of Type 9s or a fleet carrier full of stuff, you know, so it'd be interesting to find out.
I think you get about a week to do it in, is that about right?
Something like that.
So, I mean... Even with just a single person, you can do a lot of hauling in a week.
Yeah. Yeah, only if you don't, I don't know, work or something
similar. So you take a week off and you have a really good trucker's holiday. What's more worrying is, do you get paid for the materials you deliver, or is it a donation?
Ooh.
That, I wouldn't call that worrying. I don't mind. If it's a donation, I do not mind at all.
Well, yeah, but it's going to significantly change the dynamic of how much it costs. It might only be 100 million or half a billion for the beacon, but if you then need another 5, 15, 25 billion in materials, that's suddenly more expensive than a fleet carrier, so...
I would doubt that. I don't.
Or is
that.
It profitable? I mean, do you actually make money out of shipping it? Is it like a CG?
Yeah, that's the thing. Did you make money by bringing it in? So I don't know.
Well, but it's only, it'll be speculation, but I'm guessing not at first. However, it's conceivable that you could set up a colony system. If you give it the right ports with the right economies, you could probably. I don't know. I'm skipping a few details, but I'd imagine there's a way to do it.
That you'll probably need to build a chain of different economies on the way out to the more distant ones if you're trying to get out to somewhere. So you're not coming all the way back to the bubble for your mined materials or whatever, but you've actually set up a mining rig somewhere But you're not going to be making money off these. The economy runs itself and keeps its own money. So,
if there's an absolutely amazing place to go mining, though, and right outside, imagine in orbit over the rings, over the planet with those rings where you go mining, there's a port in boom, and its economies are, what is it, industrial and high tech?
Extraction,
refinery, one of those, yeah. Mm-hmm. If it's got that dual economy, if it's got the correct, I think it's industrial refinery. If it's got that dual economy and the
permanent boom, and you'll make a fortune at the local station.
And it's right over a mining. Yeah, that's the thing to do with it.
Yeah, but there's not going to be any passive income to the architect of the system or anything like that. It's, you get your name on it, and basically that's all.
Kind of think for what they're saying as well, that you're going to need some of that. So you're going to need your extraction economy stuff like metals and things like that. But at some point, you're probably going to need electronics and machinery, which comes from industrial manufacturing.
Yeah, the high-tech and the industrials, yeah.
Yeah, or the high-tech.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a whole extra level of detail on the sim of how you manage the BGS. Because you are going to be able to create economies of the type that you're missing in parts of the bubble where you are.
Vocarious, do you want to take over the BGS?
The Hutton BGS? I don't know the first thing about BGS.
I don't either.
On the best of days, I still call investments super. Was it super expansion instead of investment?
No, super boom. Super boom, I think it is.
I think that's what happens when an asteroid hits the moon and turns into two Grand Canyons, isn't it? A super boom.
Yeah. That also super expands into lots of tiny pieces.
Just Christmas.
Covering a large area. Yeah. I was only saying that because Jim had mentioned how complicated the BGS was going to get at that stage, and I was like, do you want to take this one?
if anything, our mission stacking ruins the BGS, because if you do missions for every single faction, then you get this kind of they move them all towards the mean, which causes a lot of wars.
But that's sometimes exactly what you need in the BGS, so.
And usually we tell people to go and do something for Hutton anyway. We don't, you know.
And yeah, and speaking of missions, there's something which occurred is with the infill actions of commanders within the bubble, it'll ruin quite a lot of places where you can do, like, ruin quite a lot of mission loops. Where there are certain places where you can do missions because of the lack of systems around.
Yeah, you can only go from one system back. Was it?
Yeah, there's the classic Imperial grind of data at Nagalin and Mainani. But apart from that, there's also anyone doing bounty hunting stacking is also looking for systems where there's only one anarchy faction within 10 light years, for example. So the colonization could ruin that in the bubble, but on the periphery of the bubble, I think it'll improve it. I think if you can get one anarchy faction out there, that kind of bubble frontier as it expands is going to be incredibly good for bounty hunting missions.
Yeah. I wonder, I think that's the thing as well, because going out towards the Pleiades, there's quite a lot of wee odd systems kind of dotted about, so it might join them up, you know?
In know little baby steps of 10 light years at a time.
Yeah. Well, there's, well, it's only, I mean, it only goes to what, something like, is it 450 light years to the Pleiades?
That's only 45 expansions.
Yeah. Well, I suppose what would be interesting out there is if you get a colony system into one of the empty systems around the Pleiades, mm-hmm. where Thargoids have signals, because even empty systems around there, you can get hyperdiction on the way in, and then once you repeat the jump and get in there, check the FSS, you see a whole load of non-human signal sources. So
now that could might be get some interesting.
Yeah, if you get a colony in there, yeah,
that's going to be fun.
We can invade them for a change.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. But yeah, it's just going to be interesting just to try something as new as this. And, you know, it's a bit off the kind of beaten path of what we've done before. You know, it's a change to ships. I loved getting the new ships and things like that, but this is something a wee bit different, maybe a wee bit special that you can get into, you know. Not like the other stuff that we've done before, really.
Yeah, it definitely gives much more hands-on to the individual players of reshaping pieces of the galaxy in ways that could actually be quite significant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sounds like fun to me.
Indeed. Oh, I guess in the absence of Amelia, I shall ask, do we have a word of the week?
Oh, yes, we have a word of the week. The word of the week this week is panpigoptosis. Panpigoptosis.
And can you use that in a sentence?
Well, let's find out what it means.
I was going to say, would you like me to tell what
it's more
it is
fun
first?
In a sentence. Go on then, what
Due
does it
to
mean? Go on then, what's
Pan
it mean?
Panpigoptosis, the Apology officer could not find a flight suit to fit. Any ideas what it might be?
Are we back to that Christmas
expansion?
Admittedly,
you can see it, so...
Does it mean I've got a massive head?
No, it means you got really short legs.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, stand up
like
and say that.
Idea.
Oh, you are. Yeah.
What do you think this word could be? Who lives in a word like this?
Me, apparently.
Apparently so.
Panpigoptosis. It's medical now.
Oh no! I've forgotten. How
it also means
them.
You get to. It also means you get to have two breakfasts.
What, one for each leg?
No, you're a hobbit.
What about second breakfast?
Yeah. Combine that with the hairy feet. I've got the accent for saying what about second breakfast?
True.
Although he says breakfast. Anyway, should we move on to spice fart of the week?
I guess we should move on to the spicy farts.
Remember to.
Beans from Hutton straight to your brain. Right. Space Facts this week looks at Ceres. I'm saying that right, aren't I?
Ceres, yeah,
not Ceres or Karen or whatever. Facts about Ceres. One, it's offy wee. Ceres is 950 kilometres in diameter, making it the smallest dwarf planet in our solar system. And it's closer than you think. Well, unless you watch The Expanse, in which case it's exactly as far away as you think. Ceres is located between Mars and Jupiter, making it the only dwarf planet in the inner solar system. It is crunchy. Ceres likely has a rocky core, an icy mantle, and a dusty top layer.
They should clean more often.
Yeah. It's got bright spots. Ceres has bright spots that are highly reflective salt left behind by evaporated briny water. Ceres is generally grey, with bluish bits. It's Baltic. Temperature, daytime surface temperatures in Ceres range from minus 136 Fahrenheit to minus 28 Fahrenheit. That's minus 180 Kelvin.
No, it's or, not.
I know it's not. And it says minus 180 Kelvin to minus 240 Kelvin. And no, I'm thinking, no, it's not right. That's what it tells you on the website.
That'll be centigrade. Or Celsius, yeah. Rather.
Yeah, it sounds about right. At 28 degrees Fahrenheit, you could stand outside if you wore your big parka. It got promoted. Ceres was previously called an asteroid, but was reclassified as a dwarf planet in 2006. Moons, it hasn't got any. And I think it's the only one of the dwarf planets that doesn't have a moon. Satellites, though, it does have one satellite. The Dawn spacecraft arrived there in 2015. And this is the kicker. Water. It's got loads of water. More than Earth has, probably. Ceres is estimated to be 25% water or water ice. By comparison, Earth is 0.02% water by mass. And that's it for Space Facts this week. Space Facts, lots of space facts.
Ha! That song gets stuck in my head so bad.
What, this one?
Yes.
Yeah. It's the water one that got me.
Yeah, that's so, a lot of water.
It's a lot of water.
What was that percentage you said again? So for Ceres, the percentage of water?
25.
It's estimated to be as high as 25%.
25%, and for Earth? Yeah.
0.02.
Now, so I just looked up, I just got the robot to tell me what their actual masses were. So for Ceres, the mass is just under 10 to the 21 kilograms.
Yeah. Huh.
So 25% of that would be 2.5 to the 20 kilograms.
Earth is 10 to the 23 kilograms.
It's 6 times 10 to the 24, and you said 24. Point what percent? Sorry.
0.02.
That's a so a thousandth would be 0.1. So that's like a 5,000th. If you divide that by 5,000, I don't know. I think that's around about the same amount of water.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
You're gonna have to go back to your series facts page.
Yeah.
Was it the Ladybird Book of Space Facts?
No, I think it might have been the NASA one, if I remember right. It'd have been the NASA one. They would have both those things wrong.
Let's get the actual calculator. So that's no. So okay, that's so 2.
You're taking all the fun out of it. I'm going to start putting a disclaimer on Space Facts.
So you said 0.02. That's a 1,000th would be 0.1. It's a 5,000th. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a 5,000th.
Yeah.
But then that was times 10 to the 24. So that I need to increase that by 10,000. No, I think in total I might have screwed up a order of magnitude. If I didn't, I think Earth has a few times more. About 6 times more water in total. If I did screw up an order of magnitude, they have about the same amount of water. Maybe okay. Ceres has a little bit more, but
yeah. So what was the mass of Ceres again?
9.4 times 10 to the 20 kilograms.
So roughly 10 to the 21 kilograms. Because Earth
roughly
comes
10
out
to
at
the 21, yeah.
Yeah, because Earth's water comes out at about 1.2 times 10 to the 21 as well.
Oh, so that's just Earth has just got more water than all the massive Ceres.
No.
Oh, I see. Once you've applied that, yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
So yeah, they come out to very, very close.
Yeah.
Certainly within the same order of magnitude.
I have to get back.
Several orders of magnitude difference on the size, that's quite impressive.
Yeah, I have to get back to the original text, which says probably more than Earth has. Okay.
You're hiding behind probably. Okay.
That's interesting to go, yeah, it's 25, it's 0.02, but then it's much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
then you know, and you're like, yeah, you know, okay.
I just heard percentages being compared, and I thought, well, hold on.
Yeah, hold on a minute.
The index mass here is not.
No, I mean, that's a very valid point. That's a very valid point, and I didn't even think about it because I just went, yeah, that sounds amazing. But yeah. But like you say, the same amount of water, but on a much tinier thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting.
Of course, that's all going to change when Cornwall builds the deepest swimming pool in the world. So.
Because building a swimming pool generates water.
Once they fill that, there'll be even more water.
Yeah, they'll need to fill it with something. That's it. They'll be sending an expedition to Ceres to get enough water to fill this thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Flossie, save us from this insanity, please.
I was going to shout Aardvark, but I get drawn in.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that anymore. Here we go.
No, you're not.
It's Flossie and the community goes.
Hello, Flossie here with this week's CG News. It is week 2 of Brewer Corporation Planetary Survey Initiative, where we have to go and find some systems around the bubble which have certain planets in them. And the more we do, like FSS or DSS in each body, the more our payments are. And as a reward at the end of it all, we get a nice new DSS thingy, surface scanner. So it's now past tier 5 with over 3,550,574 reports submitted by 10,856 contributors. This was a little while ago. Continues until next Thursday morning to allow as many commanders as possible to contribute after returning from their exploration trips. There are no new CGs this week, so that's it for this week's CG News.
Flossie told you what to do.
Now, there's a slight dilemma here, because we've got the finishing up of a CG, so you had some great news for us, but you've got no CGs this week, and we've got a song for that.
Well, there is a CG this week. It's part 2 of the one that started last week.
Yeah, that counts. That counts.
Yes. Yeah. It's just there's no new ones.
Yeah. Old CGs is good enough. Old CGs is good enough. We like them. We can knock the dust off, bang out the dents, and they'll be fine.
Yeah.
I was looking at that. The progress on that, it's kind of slowed down a bit after it hit 5, but I reckon there's going to be a massive dump of turning it, on the Wednesday.
Are we back to commanders saving up their number 2s again?
Yeah.
All those commanders doing their duty.
I don't know. Well, isn't it over halfway of, if you ignore the tiers and just look at the start and end, isn't it already over halfway?
Let's have a look.
I'm just looking at the thingy within Elite, and it just looks physically
36.25%. Estimated completion 79%. That's at the current rate, of course.
Apart from the massive dump that you're probably right about people taking in a few days' time. Dropping in a few days' time.
The little bar thing, it must be logarithmic or something, because it looks like it's over halfway and we've just reached the halfway mark in terms of time. So
I think the scale is roughly linear per section more than it is linear per ton delivered or credit delivered, usually.
Oh, like I say.
it's an artist impression.
Mm-hmm.
Right then, so let's move on to the complete lack of Beetlejuice and Wotherspoon this week. Sadly, they've taken a look at the lack of news in the galaxy and decided to put their feet up and sip a cocktail and leave us with a silence instead of a news article, which I hope they're enjoying their cocktail.
But
we have no Galnet News Digest this week, which would leave us with a rare report, except that Amelia sadly is out recording one as we speak and is therefore unavailable to produce one.
And I locked her out.
Well, yeah, that too. But that just means that we've reached the end of the show.
End of the show.
No. The end of the show.
Early bedtime. Crikey. Yeah.
Bedtime? Never.
Small children. You sleep whenever you can get it.
Yeah, the now commences my solid 2 hours of Beat Saber. So.
Wow.
Well, I am going to do more exploration to keep my top 25% place.
How many calories does 2 hour in Beat Saber use up?
It depends whether you do it. Well, if it's on, depends on the difficulty you're on.
It depends really on whether he's doing the floral dance. So
I do the fastest music, but I only do normal or hard. I don't do anything harder than hard.
Yeah.
My best so far.
Some of them I do on easy.
So I can do, if you know the Camellia song Spinning Eternally, I can do that on Expert. I can do a few on Expert Plus. I can't remember the names though.
I can't do any on Expert. Or Expert Plus, of course. No, the highest I go to is hard.
Yeah.
Most of them are on normal. And a couple like, what's that one? That Camellia one there.
Final Boss Chan?
I've forgotten the name of it. The Power of the Saber Blade.
Oh, that's Dragon Force.
I do that on easy. I do fastest music, but on
easy. That one's a bit of an oddity. It's kind of a gateway to the next skill up. So.
And the next one under that, the other one, I do that on easy as well.
I need to get into it. I haven't played it.
Have you heard the fastest music at the moment? It's like Chipmunks. Apparently, it is a known fault, and I think it's supposed to be being cured tomorrow.
Sure, so, of course it will.
Thank goodness. I hope it does. It sounds awful.
Right?
Doing my Beat Saber to Queen, they all sound like Chipmunks.
So, is anybody free to shout a farewell?
I can if you want.
Yeah.
I'm on my own in the house, so nobody to annoy.
Let's not waste the opportunity.
Okay. High volume warning for those listening. Be warned if you're in headphones that it might get loud. So,
Father Mug!
Father Mug!
Mug.
Muggity.
Mug, mug, mug. Mug, mug. Mug.
Journey too long, or cargo too small. Profit margins never really mattered at all. You're gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. Loading all the teen out to the brim with the rest for the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
For the more.
Yeah, everybody's seen the trucker's song. Flossie always seems to crash into the sun. Skibble ice, the pilot on the Xbox One. Helping out the free, you know he leads us well. Trucking across the galaxy, now everybody out for the more.
For the more. mark,
for the mark,
for the mark.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark.
Everybody sing the hurting trucker's song. For the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark.
You know just where we're coming from. For the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark.
Everybody sing the trucker's song. Give me a large path that I can land on, and I'll give you cargo and sing you my song. No point 22 light years to go, cruising to work, oh, 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 oh. No journey too long, no cargo too small. The profit margins never really mattered at all. Gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We're taking anything, anytime, anywhere. So shout it out loud, like you don't even care. For the more,
for the more,
for the more,
for the more.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the more,
for the more,
for the more. Everybody sing the trucker's song. For the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from. For the mark,
for the mark,
for the mark. Everybody sing the trucker's song.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the show. Everyone's buggered off now, so why don't you bugger off too?
Seamless.